never filtered, always fun.
Hey, have you ever had Mugu Gai Pan?
Probably, but it would have been at 2:30 in the morning, and I don't really remember it.
There's nothing better than Chinese food at like 3 in the morning.
This is Overdrive on TSN 1050, the official voice of the Leafs.
Final half hour. It's an abbreviated Overdrive. Leafs Devils tonight. Pregame at 6:30. Puck drop at 7 right here on TSN 1050. Brian Hayes and Craig Button in here. Darren Dreger will join us around the table at some point.
See my shirt?
Yes.
I don't know if you see the shirt.
I can see the shirt.
Do you see what it's on it?
Blue.
Mustache. Movember.
Is that right?
My my friends, O'Connor's Menswear out in Calgary.
Mm-hmm.
I delivered 5 ties for Jeff O'Neill here.
He wanted
5 ties.
I saw that.
But my friends at O'Connor's Menswear, they partnered with Eitan, the shirt maker. And they've come up with these mustache shirts.
Okay.
So it's Movember, so I'm wearing one.
I like
it. For Movember. Real good.
That's a great initiative.
It is, isn't it?
Have you been tracking Jay and Dan and their mustaches? And
yeah.
They're like, they can grow a mustache.
And you know what? There's all of us can grow a mustache, but it's who can grow a mustache.
Right. There's a difference between that's a disgusting right. looking mustache, and wow, that's actually very cool.
Yeah, it really
very
is.
Very stylish.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of disappointed that one of them can't grow a mustache. You know what I'm saying? Like, if one of them had a great one and the other one just looked
awful.
Yeah,
that's awful, right. They both look good.
It somehow would have made for, I think, better material, but they both actually can grow a very good mustache.
And if one of them couldn't and one of them could, you can bet that the one that could would be making fun of the one that could.
Would be really feeling good about himself.
Yeah.
Night in, night out. So anyway, neither of us are going with that, but I'm all for Movember, and I like it. So you're on the panel tonight, right? Or what are you doing tonight? There's a million games on TSN.
You know what? This is one of those days where we got lots going on. We got the Leafs on TSN. We got the Senators on TSN. We have the Habs on TSN. So, but we did a core four under 24, ranking the NHL teams best four players under 24 years of age. So Frank Saravalli and I are going to be doing that in the Leafs pregame.
Okay.
And then we get to That's Hockey with Gino Retta. You know, we're going to be doing that. And then I'm jumping in on the Habs panel tonight with Tessa Bonhomme.
Nice.
And then if you want to see me on the overnight, you can tune me up because I'll be on the SC podium breaking down NHL games after that.
So. All right. So you're going to be a busy man. Make sure they get a close-up of the shirt.
Yeah, Gino wants to do that too. So
all right.
We'll be doing it.
All right, Darren Dreger, Hockey
Hello,
Insider.
Darren.
Here. What's up, Dregs?
Well, you know, just covering all bases today. Craig knows the drill.
I
sat next across from a friend of yours.
Paul Cameron.
I did. Yeah. We had a nice, lovely chat. His boy played really well. Colton, who's really good friends with Mason.
Sarnia Sting.
And a really good example. Not invited to the U-17 camp in the summer,
mm-hmm.
but they're watching. He went and played, and not only did he make that team, he was real solid there. But I had a real nice chat with him. He spoke, said that you and him and the family are close, and really nice to see
great
the parents
people.
There.
He's a real good kid. He's got a chance.
I agree with you.
The big picture, he's got a chance.
Yep.
Well, those big tournaments are coming close, right? I mean, mm-hmm. the World Juniors is one we focus on, but under 17 is under 18.
We just had the under 17.
It just happened
in Dawson Creek and Fort St. John.
Okay.
Yeah, I wonder, I think we're, especially here at TSN, we're all in favor of international events, international hockey. I haven't got this directly from any of the CHL teams, but that sort of thing would drive me crazy if I were a general manager or a coach of an OHL team where I'm losing my 17-year-olds. Now the top guys, so they're gone for 10 days. Then you've got the World Juniors around the corner. So what's that, 2 weeks
or closer to three?
Month.
It's probably
okay,
a month.
Well, there you go.
Because December, I think they're gathering. Team Canada's gathering like on the 10th.
Yeah, it's 8th, 9th, or 10th.
And it ends on the 5th.
And we have to include the Olympics. You know, there could be a couple of junior age players playing for Team Canada in South Korea.
Really?
So now if you're the owner of the property of that player in one of these CHL clubs, you've lost him for, I'm using the under 17. Chances are it's not a 17-year-old playing on Team Canada in the Olympic team, but just the disruption of all of it.
Yeah.
At some point, you know, and I say this not from a Canadian perspective, maybe from a global perspective, when is too much too much? When is too much for these kids?
And you know, one of the things, we see it in the NHL where the younger players are able to have more of an impact in their lineups. You also see it with 17-year-olds coming in. Like, you know, Alexis Lafreniere, who was the first overall pick in Quebec, and Ryan Suzuki and Peyton Krebs. They're good players on their team.
They're good players.
It's not just like they're going, like, okay, go and play and get some experience. And they're not the only ones. There's some really good players there.
Well, there's a business element to that, too. I have my own experience a few years ago. Erie was playing their one game up at Barrie. They were in Barrie, and I got tickets in advance. My wife is from up there, and her mom is a big, big fan. So we all got tickets, and we were going. McDavid wasn't there. He was at some tournament, under 17 or under 18, whatever it was.
Yeah, that
and it
stings.
Cost them money because darn there right. were people that were like, "I'm not going to, you know, I'm not going to buy tickets." The reason you wanted to go see Erie at that point was to see McDavid
for sure.
So that owner, not owning the Erie Otters, but owning the Colts, were probably like, this kid not being here may have cost me a couple grand, whatever it was.
Well, and it's interesting, and Darren knows the player very, very well. Jack Hughes, who's playing with the National Team Development Program, and he's an elite player. But the USHL, I'm interested to see how they market this young man, because really, if you want to talk about a star, they should be trying to fill the buildings to come and watch him. And because if he was playing in the Ontario Hockey League, you'd be doing that to come and watch. Like, not at the same level as McDavid, but...
Right.
That's Jimmy Hughes' boy, former from the Leafs director of development. Okay. Yeah.
Well, this has been the case with the NBA for a long time. The NBA plays during the winter months, and they go to the Olympics in the summer. And I would be curious to find out if the IOC, I don't think they would ever want to do it, because hockey is such a huge part of the winter games, and summer games sells itself, and every country around the world is involved. But I wonder if Bettman would prefer them to be a part of the summer games.
Well, I'll tell you, I talked to a number of NHL owners, and more than a couple repeatedly tell me, let's do it in the summer. You know, follow the basketball model. Now, if you do it, you know, the Players Association, I shouldn't say I know the Players Association is going to push back, but it does become a work overload issue too, right? I mean, you could argue, of course, it's the same in season. It's worse, perhaps, in season, but it would have to be collectively bargained, you know, because now you're infringing entirely, you know, in their off season. But
seems like leverage for the owners, though, because the players, they all say, we want to go.
You want to go.
Anything to go.
Yeah, here's your opportunity.
Exactly. And, I mean, the IOC would have to agree to it. And
well, the other thing we hear, too, is about, you know, the under-23 go and play in the Olympics like they do with soccer.
Yeah.
The problem with that is that NHL teams will be losing a lot of good under-23.
Right. You can't have that. McDavid and Matthews are all out of here.
Take Clayton Keller out of the Arizona Coyotes lineup.
But what do you have to watch? I mean, the only kid. So this Houston situation popped up yesterday, and I found the statement from Tillman Fertitta, who recently bought the Rockets for like $2 billion. He came out, he admitted to the discussion with Bettman,
right,
and he admitted to, I guess, mutual interest, or he said, I'm very interested in the possibility of bringing the NHL to Houston. But I find it, maybe refresh my memory, because if a prospective owner said that in Quebec, or when Balsillie used to send
it's frowned
out
frowned on.
Why is this just accepted by, like, I don't know if it is, but it feels like Bettman, when it comes to Seattle and now Houston, they're like, say whatever you want. When you're ready to take us, we're coming.
You're right, but I wonder if they learned something through the whole Bill Foley experience with the Vegas Golden Knights. Now, a little bit different because, you know, those are non-traditional markets. Well, Houston would be a non-traditional hockey market from an NHL perspective, but it's had pro hockey in the Houston area for a long, long time. Likewise in Seattle. Seattle's a hockey market.
Yes, it is.
It doesn't have a pro team in terms of an NHL team. Vegas, I think that they felt that they had to sell hockey in Vegas, even though Vegas has a history of pro hockey. So they allowed Bill Foley to be more forthcoming.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that the league would appreciate, you know, Fertitta coming out with the follow-up statement after the league and Katie Strang's story from The Athletic wouldn't offer a comment and certainly wouldn't offer confirmation that Bettman did meet with Tillman Fertitta. I know that that meeting took place. My sense is that it was an information gather. That's what it was. Fertitta looking for some direction from the National Hockey League and the best way to at least investigate the process of acquiring an NHL franchise. But then you take it to the next level. And the next level is, well, it's either expansion or it's relocation. And that takes you back into the Arizona Coyotes predicament, right? And, you know, my information from Arizona's perspective is, yet again, the league and the Coyotes are working on an arena solution. So then it's not relocation, at least involving Arizona. It has to be expansion. And how long is Tillman Fertitta and Houston willing to wait?
Mm-hmm.
Seems so, like they should be behind Seattle.
Yeah, let me ask you this. Yeah, but if you're got a market in Houston that's really good, would you not be more interested in buying the Arizona Coyotes and going to the league and saying, listen, look, they got these young players. I'm going to. That's the team I want to buy.
Yeah. Right, but doesn't that open the door to Balsillie 2.0? Like, how does that
not
work?
Not if it's
like,
sold. I mean, the Winnipeg.
But that's what he wanted to do, was buy it and bring
it
to Hamilton.
But he wanted to do it in a manner that well, the league fought it, and with the backing, as you well know, Darren, with the backing of the other leagues, because they didn't want this ability of teams to move it. But you know, if you're considering buying a team. Right, and we saw the Atlanta Thrashers move to Winnipeg.
Yeah.
Right, so I'm just saying, if I'm that owner and I want to buy an NHL team, maybe the process is investigating the Arizona
Coyotes. Here's the crazy thing, though. Look how awful Arizona is. Vegas is better than them right now.
I know.
You go through the expansion process, maybe you get a better team immediately.
No,
than
you
whatever
don't.
I shouldn't say you don't.
That's not fair to say it. But if you're looking at building your team with young players,
you'd rather Arizona.
Oh yeah.
Than Vegas.
Yeah, and look, the National Hockey League went through the expansion draft process, and forced teams to expose good players because there was a $500 million price tag attached to that.
Mm-hmm.
So that price tag is going to be at least that or higher. But that's when you're going to get fellow owners saying, "All right, the money is great. But we can't weaken our organizations any further."
Darren Dreger, Hockey Insider in studio. Leafs Devils tonight on TSN 4 and right here on TSN 1050. Don't forget, the MLS playoffs continue with TFC facing rival Columbus in the Eastern Conference Championship. Catch the first leg Tuesday at 7:30 on TSN and on 1050. Matthew's not going tonight.
Yeah.
That surprised me. I figured when he practiced yesterday with his linemates, I figured he was going tonight. I mean, how did you react to the news?
I wasn't surprised.
Really?
I mean, it's a huge step in the right direction that he practiced yesterday, and he skated again today. My sense on the weekend in working the angle of this story was that the Leafs weren't going to rush him, and it could be longer than what was expected. And I feel like that's where it is today. Now, he's still listed as day-to-day, and based on the fact he practiced yesterday, I think you can appreciate that he's real close.
Mm-hmm.
But there's something there that doesn't quite sit right with the medical people of the Toronto Maple Leafs. Now, Matthews has to be going stir-crazy. Especially, again, he practiced yesterday. He would report how he feels, to the medical people, and ultimately they make that decision. So he's got to be close. But we're going to continue to watch this day by day. What I'm assured of is that this injury, and some believe it is back-related, is unrelated to the injury that he had,
a couple of years ago
in Switzerland. I'm told that it is not related to that.
Okay.
So, and I was told it's not structural. So if it's not structural, it's muscular. It's got to be a pull, a strain, something like that, and he just needs a little bit more time to make sure that he's as close to being healthy as he can be.
Well, this is a lot like when they decided to tank and pain was coming, and they were finally honest with this fan base after years of people saying, you can't do it to people in Toronto, they won't accept the rebuild. They said they were going to do it, they did it, everyone accepted it. I think the same thing could apply here to a different extent. I understand why teams around the league withhold information, but people are freaking out because they're like, what is going on with this guy?
Yeah.
If they just came out and said, listen, guys, it's a muscle thing, he'll be back.
I know.
People would leave them alone.
Yeah.
But they do it to themselves because it's like a state secret that they won't reveal.
I stopped chasing injuries a while ago because of that very reason. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. One of the worst ones of the year was Roberto Luongo getting hurt for the Florida Panthers. You can see him coming onto the net. He's got his glove off, was it glove or blocker, whatever it was, and he's shaking his hand and he's flexing his hand and all of that, and they come out and describe it as an upper body injury, and he's out for a lengthy period of time, and they still wouldn't go beyond, come on, seriously, we can all see it was his hand, and specifically it was his thumb. In this case, is it back-related? Nobody's confirming that. That's just what we're told. But I don't disagree with you. It would be better if they even came as far as to say it is a muscle strain.
Right.
It's something that requires 2 to 3 weeks to settle down with treatment. Skating, yes, he can skate. He can participate in practice as he gets closer. But beyond that, we're not going to divulge anymore. I get that.
It's the only league that, that does it. I mean, the NFL, for different reasons, a lot of it is gambling. They reveal what the injury is. Now, they can mess around with that as well. I mean, Brady every single week is questionable to play. He never misses games. So they do manipulate the process, but baseball, they tell you. Basketball, they tell you. Hockey, they just have decided.
Well, it would make Babcock's life easier too. If the club came out and said, you know, on day two, look, it's a muscle strain, and we're not going to have any further comment on that. When he's back onto the ice, and that's going to be a clear indication that he's real close. Then Babcock doesn't have to deal with it twice a day.
The two biggest hockey markets.
Let me just tell you what Scotty Bowman told me years ago. He said on the obvious things, Roberto Luongo, just tell everybody what it is. He goes, there's a couple of things. Nobody's phoning your doctors or trying to find the inside area on that, right? Hey, you know what? He's got a knee injury. It looks like it's going to be 2 to 4 weeks. He says, but his investigative reporters are trained to find things. So now when you're withholding it, now they come in, and now they're not only looking for that, but now they find things they were never looking for in the first place.
That is exactly right.
That's a great point.
And Scotty said, so why do we want to do this to ourselves?
Well, I mean, look at the two biggest hockey markets in the world are dealing with the exact same thing. Auston Matthews and Carey Price, the two faces of the respective franchise, just aren't playing, and we don't know exactly what's going on, and both coaches are getting flustered. You mentioned Babcock. What does he expect? Like, every day, this is the biggest story until the guy comes back. It's Auston Matthews.
Yeah.
Of course people are going to be like, okay, what's up?
Yeah.
Like, they're not going to stop asking, nor should they.
No.
You have to ask.
It's not Detroit. And I mean, there are good journalists in Detroit, always has been, and there always will be. But there were fewer. You know, in Toronto, you know, when a player of the significance of Auston Matthews goes down, it's not just a sports story. It's a news story, right? So you've got additional cameras from that perspective, and you get the odd news hound in there who he's not worried about how you frame or she isn't worried about how you frame a question or who Mike Babcock is. They want the goods.
No.
And if you're not answering the question, they'll hit you with it again.
Right.
You know?
Oh, they're trained to grill like John Torrey and Kathleen Wynn. They don't care about Mike Babcock, you know, not being happy with them. Leafs Devils tonight, again, Matthews won't play, but they're 3-0 without him. And you know, they're plugging along. They've had different stages to their season. The first 6-7 games, they played well. They scored a lot of goals anyway. They won a lot of games. Then they lost 5 of 6 in regulation, including out west, where it was abysmal. But since then, since coming home, they've performed pretty well. And I kind of get the impression like they're going to be a relatively unpredictable team all year. They were very much that a year ago. I mean, they were the biggest high-wire act in the league.
Yeah.
I think they've quieted that down a little bit, but you know, Leaf fans, myself included, that maybe we're going a bit crazy the first 7 games. I think you still got to brace yourself for an up-and-down season, don't you?
For sure.
It's going to be a grind.
And through this stretch of late without Auston Matthews, you've got some real positive signs, and none of them would be surprising. You know, the play of Patrick Marleau. You know, maybe as an Eastern Conference audience, they didn't know the type of player that Patrick Marleau really was in the West with the San Jose Sharks. There's nothing surprising about his contribution. I mean, that's the type of player he is. And I don't have any long-term concerns with Patrick Marleau playing center versus the wing. I mean, he's a versatile guy and seldom gets hit because of how smart a player he is and how well he skates. You know, Mitch Marner has turned it around of late. Connor Brown is a consistent contributor. Yep. James Van Riemsdyk is starting to find his scoring touch again. So I think those pieces all combined have certainly helped soothe some of the absence of not having Matthews in the lineup.
Well, and I think Morgan Rielly has performed a lot better early in the season than he did last year. I mean, last year it was an avalanche on him and Zaitsev a lot of nights. Yeah. I mean, they were really getting exposed to the point. By the end of the year, Babcock switched up the D pairings. He just realized he couldn't go with those two up against the top lines in the NHL. But I think Ron Hainsey has stabilized his game a lot, and you got to give it up to Morgan Rielly.
I'll tell you what, I think that Morgan Rielly's one of the good guys of the game. Mm-hmm. You know, you can have a real nice conversation with Morgan Rielly when you get face-to-face with him, hockey-related or otherwise. He's an engaging young man, an incredible smart person, both on and off the ice. I think what was bothering him was he knew he was more offensive than what he was allowing himself to be. And I think that speaks to the respect level that he has for what he needed to do in the moment to win or to help his team win, as opposed to embracing a real strong aspect to his game, which is the offensive side. Craig watched him in Moose Jaw. I mean, this kid can play. He could put the puck in the net. He was a contributing player, and he hasn't been allowed to be that. But I'm not saying that the Toronto Maple Leafs put the shackles on him. I think in his own head, he had to get to that place where he was comfortable enough to say, all right, Hainsey's here. This guy's got me. I'm just going to do what I can do. And that took some weight off his game.
Well, and it's almost like he was so conscientious
yeah.
of making sure that he didn't compromise anything. He's 23 years old.
Yeah, I know.
Keep that in mind, too. I think that there's a level above where he's at now that you're going to see points be produced, and you're going to see that skating ability. And it all comes with that confidence to say, yeah. I got all these situations.
You know, this is how good a guy he is, and the Players Association may not love this. He had a figure in mind going into his contract negotiation before the extension was there, and he got what he had in mind. And I'm telling you, he could have got more. And, you know, there was a conversation, and the conversation went, oh, you can get more. No, that's what I wanted. That's enough.
Well, that
doesn't happen.
That doesn't get brought up enough because, you know, we focus so much on where the kids are going to go with their money.
Yeah.
They got Nazem Kadri at 4.5. He's on pace for 30 again. Like he's outperforming his contract, and Riley at $5 million for six. He's outperforming that contract. That's say, where
but,
you
but
make up the dollars
terms
and cents.
Like, yes, Brian, but we yeah. use terms like outperforming your contract. But it's the level that you get, to Darren's point, about mentally. So now if you're making $6 million, and you start to go, oh, God, I got to do this, right? Nazem can just play now. Yep. I think the best thing that happened to Nazem, they showed faith in him. Remember, there was some tough love with Nazem.
Oh, lots of it was.
And then they said, we like you there, and now he can just go and play. And I think that's important to keep in mind.
I agree.